I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I wanted to talk to Pat Leonard. I saw he was tweeting, so I figured, hey, Pat, if you're up, why not come on and discuss some Giants with me on The Fan? He said, okay. So we welcome in New York Giants beat writer and columnist for the Daily News, Pat Leonard. Pat, it is, I'm sure for you, been a rough couple years following this team around. I mean, my 9 in a row, Pat? I mean, they can't even win one of their last 9 games? Come on!
And Sal, yeah, my brain hurts right now thinking about it. I mean, and the thing is, they've had an easy schedule. They've played a bad Eagles team, the Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears the week after they benched Trubisky, the Arizona Cardinals, the New York Jets. These are all teams that they have lost to during this 9-game stretch. You would think it was playing the Baltimore Ravens and the 49ers to go on a run like that, but they have now lost 9 in a row, which is tied for their longest losing streak ever going back to 1976. A 95-year franchise history, and they've hit the all-time low.
And then when Shermer was asked about it afterward, it's worse than Mickey Callaway. What did he say exactly after that? Well, yeah, it's not something you want to be a part of. Well, what was Shermer's comments after that in particular when he was alerted to the fact that this is a historic losing streak for this franchise?
Yeah, he basically said, well, no, I have no reaction to that. You know, obviously, we all need to do the best we can to put an effort on the field in the next 3 weeks that's, you know, sufficient or whatever. And of course that means winning games. And it's just, you know, rote responses. And, you know, he had an answer tonight too, Sal, that really alarmed me. He was asked if he thought that ownership would let him coach out the rest of the season. And he said, yeah, I do, but we'll just have to wait and see, won't we? You got a lot of tough ones here for me today. About questions, but you know, that reminds me of Ben McAdoo talking about how he'll coach until his key card stops working. You know, it's that idea of, I know it's coming, it's just a matter of time, you know?
I mean, it should be at this point. I think it was probably evident maybe over the last several weeks. I didn't think, Pat, that this organization would want to make a change again after hiring McAdoo and firing him, you know, less than 2 years in. I didn't think they'd want to do that again, but it's almost like he's giving them no choice. It's not even about the results. We'll get into that in a second, what the expectations are, should be, were, whatever. But it's not just about that. It's about the way he handles himself, the way he represents the organization, the way he makes his in-game decisions or lack thereof, and then the results on top of it. It's been a little bit of everything. But I feel like at this point it's inevitable, no, that he gets the boot?
I think so, and I actually, you know, I wrote a story, you know, on Eli and the loss for off tonight, but for tomorrow morning I'm writing for the Daily News that I think this game is the nail in the coffin that he's not coming back, and I guess maybe he finishes the year just because who coaches the games otherwise, but I don't even know. I mean, I saw John Mara walk out of the stadium today. He was guarded by, you know, it was like a police officer, the head of Giant Security. You know, he doesn't want to answer any questions. He's fuming. He's steaming. He doesn't want to talk. But the bottom line is, at least once a game, Pat Shermer makes a decision that makes you scratch your head. And I'm looking at it right now on the play sheet. At the end of the game, at the end of regulation, when the Eagles complete a pass on third down, it's 4th and 1 at their own 45. They ran that play with 49 seconds left, and Pat Shermer waited until there were 19 seconds left to call a timeout there, at which point, even though they're punting, the Giants just kneel it out. It goes to OT. They never get the ball back, and they lose.
What was his explanation for that?
Let me read the quote to you, because I don't know what it means. He was, you know, we asked him a bunch of questions about it and then eventually got to, well, if you called a timeout earlier, you would have saved yourself time. He said, possibly, but in that situation, they still had timeouts. And I think you've got to be careful there at that point with a long field doing something crazy and giving them an opportunity to score there. If you didn't fall asleep in the middle of that answer, you would get to the end of it and say, that makes no sense. There is no logical explanation for what he's saying.
It makes sense in the fact that it's consistent to what he is. He is a losing coach who coaches not to lose. Guess what happens when you try not to lose? You end up losing. I mean, I like being conservative as far as, you know, look, if it's fourth down and you have a chance to kick a field goal, kick the field goal. I don't need to see coaches going for it all the time. I think it's a problem now. It's an epidemic where all these coaches, the majority of them, I should say, forego the points and go for it. So I'm more of the conservative. This is obscene. I mean, this is what he is doing, Pat. It doesn't make any sense. He coaches not to lose these games. He looks scared on the sideline. He coaches scared. And guess what happens every time? They blow leads. They blow games. They never come back. They're terrible because this guy is a loser as their head coach.
And you let your team down when you take a 17-3 lead into halftime like this tonight. And you lose in overtime when clearly the margin of error to win this game was so small. All you had to do was move the ball forward offensively for a few extra minutes, and you would have won the game. What happened was they went into the locker room, and Doug Peterson, whose team played like trash in the first half, said, here's what we're going to change on offense, and here's what we're going to change on defense. They made adjustments. Pat Shurmur and the Giants made no adjustments at all. That is what happened tonight. And it's infuriating to watch because even like after the game, Pat Shurmur said he was asked if the Eagles changed anything defensively, and he said not really. But I was talking to Sterling Shepard in the locker room, and he said, well, the Eagles played a lot of man in the first half, and then they kind of switched it up and went too high zone. So, like, what's going on here? Are we not watching the same plays? And to your point about being conservative, Shurmur denied that they were intentionally conservative, but I talked to plenty of people after the game who said the opposite. The fact that they did play more conservatively in the second half offensively, and everyone's pointing to the flea flicker that didn't work out because Solder got beaten on the pressure and that Golden Tate was open. That's one play. That's one desperation play on 3rd and 14. You're behind the sticks all the time. Even in the first half, that first touchdown was 3rd and 13. It was just a slant, you know, 8 yards downfield from Eli to Slayton, and Ronald Darby gave them a missed tackle and a touchdown. But, I mean, you're talking about a Giants team right now that just got a game handed to them and handed it right back. And to me, even though there's plenty of problems personnel-wise, and I place it all on Dave Gettleman too, there were just too much tonight from Pat Shurmur to ignore how wrong he is for this team at this point.
Talk with Pat Leonard, covers the Giants for the New York Daily News, beat writer, columnist. You mentioned the roster. I'll save Gettleman for later. You mentioned the roster here, and specifically tonight, and this is what it comes down to me. If you have a 17-3 lead at halftime in a football game, you better be able to run the football in the second half and put the game away. This is a team, Pat, that we heard when Gettleman first got here talking about the Hog Mollies. He picked Saquon Barkley 2nd overall. They still, and I'm tired of hearing about Hernandez and Jalapeno, they cannot run the football. What's the problem? Is it scheme? Is it offensive line? Is it on Barkley? Why can't they run the football?
A lot of it is, I know this frustrates people to hear, but a lot of it is that teams are keying on Saquon, and they know the Giants want to get him going and that he's their best offensive player, and the Giants don't have an effective enough answer to take pressure off of him. And, I mean, people don't want to hear it in Giants land, but when you trade a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., that's what happens. You know, so why does Saquon not catch as many passes? Why does he not have as much space to run when he does catch a pass? Why are defenses focused so much on him compared to last season? It's because what are they sitting back and defending? Now, I like Darius Slayton as a rookie receiver. I do like him as a player, and Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard can make plays. I'm not saying they can't, but I am saying that defenses have figured out what the Giants want to do. And then these plays all work or don't work for different reasons. So there have been times where the offensive line has missed blocks. You know, I think of John Jalapeno or Will Hernandez missing one or two here or there tonight. And then there's times where Saquon Barkley doesn't hit the hole fast enough, where he is looking to make a guy miss because he's used to seeing people blasting through in the backfield, and he dances too much instead of just hitting the hole. But even tonight on their first drive, his first carry, I think it was, went for -3 yards because the rookie tight end Caden Smith got blown up off the edge, and it just ruined the whole play. So the Giants always talk about how their plays don't work because there's a leak that's sprung in a different place every time. But frankly, it doesn't matter if 10 guys are doing the right thing if the 11th guy isn't. And you get really tired of hearing that, because when a team never gets everything right, that means they're a bad team.
Yeah, and they're consistently bad. And I think you just touched on it. It's not one thing. It's not just Barkley. It's not just the design. It's not just the offensive line. It's a combination. One time it's the line. One time it's Barkley. One time it's the play call. I mean, it's a combination of things. But the fact that they can't run the football, to me, is their biggest weakness. And that's been something that's been going on for years. And that leads me, Pat, to the quarterback play. I mean, I don't care who's under center. If you can't balance the attack with the run game, they're not going to be very effective here. And Eli Manning tonight was terrific in the first half, and then went back to, you know, people say old Eli, but really this is Eli. Good sometimes, bad others. But again, no running game to help him out in the second half. I think that's a problem. But you had to feel good at least seeing Eli Manning go out there and play football again, something he loves to do.
Definitely. And honestly, I'm ticked off that I'm not sitting here. Like, this was setting up for a perfect night of write a triumphant story about Eli kind of trying to go out on top. The Giants finally win a game. He shows that he can still sling it. If he wants to go and try and play somewhere else next season, fine. But then even on defense, too, in the first half, the rookie corner, DeAndre Baker, was breaking up passes left and right, and he's had a terrible season, but he had a really good night early. And so there were just a lot of reasons to, even though it didn't mean they were going to win next week or do anything with the season, but the fact that Eli had some of these big plays, these feel-good plays, that throw he made down the sideline to Darius Slayton, you know, a lot of people were saying it just reminded them of the Manningham throw in the Super Bowl. You know, the 42-yarder, I think it was, on Darby. And you could actually see kind of like a little hop in Manning's step after their first touchdown on that next drive. You know, he rolled out and hit Slayton on a 10-yard pass. And that was cool to see. And I think even the people, the Eagles fans, kind of appreciated it without wanting to lose the game, but it was kind of like they understood what they were watching. You know what I mean? This could be his last game. This could be his last season, et cetera. It's just a shame that, and that's why I really do put it on the coaching staff too, is that you can't tell me that you couldn't find a way to keep your offense on the field somehow, to take pressure off Manning, because you can't rely on him for a full four quarters at this point to make the kind of plays he made in that first half. You know that the Eagles are going to adjust. I just think it's a combination of the bad personnel. And then, I mean, Eli, too, he was showing his rust. I mean, he was throwing a lot of passes behind guys. But again, like, to your point, if you're Pat Shurmur, you need to observe how your players are playing, what they're doing well, what they're not, and adjust. And frankly, like you said, if you can't run the ball and you drafted a running back number two, and this was the reason why you drafted him, was to take pressure off Manning and to have a more balanced attack, and your O-line's not good enough, your run game's not good enough. And so when Eli does have to make a start late in the season like this out of nowhere and place Daniel Jones, he's not as mobile as Jones is. And so even if he didn't turn the ball over tonight, he's immobile and, you know, he has to fall down and take a sack. And so he's not extending plays. And what you have is an offense that can go from 17 points in the first half to zero over the final second half and overtime of a ninth straight loss.
And to nobody's surprise with the way that they've gone this year, it's weird, Pat. Coming into the year, the expectations were that this team could be somewhat competitive. I mean, not that they're going to, you know, go make a playoff spot, but that they thought, okay, they should be better than what they were a year ago. Eli's going to start for them, and they're going to have Daniel Jones follow the Kansas City model or the Green Bay model. Uh-huh. And then that gets blown up after 2 weeks. So to me, the expectations of them winning 6-7 games, that's thrown out the window with the rookie. But then the rookie comes in, lights the world on fire, and now people talking postseason again. And obviously they haven't won a game since he won those first two. It's been nine straight losses. Where do we put the expectations? For me, you can't expect them to win, but obviously they shouldn't be losing nine in a row. But the expectations, you know, win-loss-wise with a rookie quarterback, they're not what they were with Eli to start the season, so it's kind of hard to evaluate, let's say, Dave Gettleman, even though his team just has two wins now here after week 14.
Right. Well, I definitely think that what impacts Gettleman most of all is what does ownership think truly of Daniel Jones, right? Are they already 100% convinced that he's the guy? Do they think he's not, or are they not sold yet either way? They're kind of wait and see. You know, from what I understand, they like the kid a lot, but they are also concerned about not only the turnovers, because rookies do turn the ball over, but the amount of turnovers has been startling. And also, given the fact that their schedule's not that hard, the fact that they haven't been able to pull out one or two there, you know, and that's what John Mara has always emphasized through this. Even when he has acknowledged publicly, I know we have to suffer a little bit in the short term for the long term, and it pains him to even say that, he's not looking to go 3-13. He was expecting this, and this is part of the Daniel Jones entering the lineup and Eli getting benched. Pat Shurmur didn't do that to sell the organization on this season's over, we're done, it's all about the future. He put Daniel Jones in because he thought he was better than Eli at that point and that they would win more games with him. And so the Giants ownership signed off on it with that understanding and belief in their coach, who believed in the QB.
And that's a huge mistake. I mean,
yeah. So that's why the expectations, though, the expectations are not let's rebuild and just eat another season. The expectations are, hey, we know that we're going to have to suffer a little bit through some growing pains, but we want to win enough games to stop being a laughingstock of the league, because that's what we are. And then you go into a game like this, a 6-straight loss to the Eagles. They've lost 10 of their last 11 to their division rival. They had 11 first downs tonight. The Eagles had 27. The Eagles had the ball for 43 minutes, and the Giants had it for 22. I mean, you look at all of these numbers, and it shows you that they are, even though the score was a 5-point game, the numbers tell you that they're not competitive. The numbers tell you that they're not close. They're nowhere close. And that is the biggest indictment and the worry when you talk about the general manager and what they're building here.
Last one, Pat, before we let you go and get to the update here with Harris. Does Gettleman get to make the call on who's the next head coach?
I'm afraid he does, but I don't think he should.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to evaluate a GM and a coach based on, you know, two seasons. And in this case, Gettleman has, you know, and you wrote about this, has made some nice decisions here, whether it's Slayton or bringing in Golden or obviously Daniel Jones. But, I mean, letting him pick the next head coach after the disaster that's been Pat Shurmur, that would be a tough one.
Yeah, my opinion is that even though we've criticized Shurmur a lot tonight and he deserves it, I think that the roster he is working with is the root problem. And the fact that Gettleman came in here and tried to build a winner his first season set them back so far that they're not only in the basement now, they might be in the basement of the NFCs for the next 5 years.
Yeah, he misread what he had, and that certainly set them back, no question about that. All right, Pat, we appreciate the couple minutes this morning. Hope to have you on again soon. Maybe when the Giants actually do, maybe when they fire Shurmur, we'll put you back on and see who's going to make the next decision. Thanks, Pat,
sounds
I appreciate
good.
It.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.
I'm just kidding.
Exactly. There you go. Pat Leonard, New York Daily News, covers the Giants. Columnist, beat writer, and all that different stuff with the Giants mess. 9 straight losses now after dropping one of the Eagles.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.